"Ah, nothing of interest in the paper, Watson," he said. I was aware that by anything of interest, Holmes meant anything of criminal interest. Oh, there was news of a revolution, of a possible war, and of an impending change of government. But these did not come within the horizon of my companion. I could see nothing recorded in the shape of crime which was not commonplace and futile. Holmes groaned and resumed his restless meanderings. "Ah, the London criminal is certainly a dull fellow," said he, in the querulous voice of the sportsman whose game has failed him. "Look out of this window, Watson. See how the figures loom up, a dimly seen, and then blend once more into the cloud bank. The thief or the murderer could roam London on such a day as the tiger does the jungle, unseen until he pounces, and then evident only to his victim." "Well, there have," said I, "been numerous petty thefts." Holmes snorted his contempt. "This great and sombre stage is set for something more worthy than that," said he. "It is fortunate for this community that I am not a criminal." "It is indeed," said I heartily. "Suppose that I were Brooks or Woodhouse, or any of the 50 men who have good reason for taking my life, how long could I survive against my own pursuit? A summons, a bogus appointment, and all would be over. It is well they don't have days of fog in the Latin countries, the countries of assassination. By Jove, here comes something at last to break our dead monotony." It was the maid with a telegram. Holmes tore it open and burst out laughing. Well, what next?" said he. "Brother Mycroft is coming round." "Why not?" I asked. "Why not? Oh, it is as if you met a tram car coming down a country lane. Mycroft has his rails and he runs on them. His Pall Mall lodgings, the Diogenes Club, Whitehall, that is his cycle. Once and only once has he been here. What upheaval can possibly have derailed him?" "Oh, does he not explain?" Holmes handed me his brother's telegram. "Must see you of Cadogan West, coming at once. Mycroft." "Cadogan West? I've heard the name." "It recalls nothing to my mind. But that Mycroft should break out in this erratic fashion, a planet might as well have left its orbit. By the way, do you know what Mycroft is?" I had some vague recollection of an explanation at the time of the adventure of the Greek interpreter. "Ah, you told me that he had some small office under the British government." Holmes chuckled. "I did not know you quite so well in those days. One has to be discreet when one talks of high matters of state. You are right in thinking that he is under the British government. You would also be right, in a sense, if you said that occasionally he is the British government." "Oh, my dear Holmes! Well, I thought that might surprise you. Mycroft draws £450 a year, remains a subordinate, has no ambitions of any kind, will receive neither honour nor title, but remains the most indispensable man in the country." "But how?" "Well, his position is unique. He has made it for himself. There has never been anything like it before, nor will be again. He has the tidiest and most orderly brain with the greatest capacity for storing facts of any man living. The same great powers which I have turned to the detection of crime, he has used for this particular business. The conclusions of every department are passed to him, and he is the central exchange, the clearing house, which makes out the balance. All other men are specialists, but his specialism is omniscience. We will suppose that a minister needs information as to a point which involves the Navy, India, Canada, and the bimetallic question. He could get his separate advices from various departments upon each, but only Mycroft can focus them all, and say offhand how each factor would affect the other. They began by using him as a shortcut, a convenience. Now he has made himself an essential. In that great brain of his, everything is pigeon-holed, and can be handed out in an instant.